The GAA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GAA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
Welcome along to the football show. Stevie and Conan are here as usual on a Thursday. So the GPS kit has landed, Conan. Stevie, you're not going to know what we're talking about here. But we've been sent in a GPS tracker. And myself and Conan were asked what we could do with it. And we said, Asher, look, we'll both wear it.
Yeah.
So I'm going to wear it in an intermediate match whenever I'm picked to start for them. There's a match on Sunday morning, but Conan's wearing it first. So, Conan, you have details about this GPS thing anyways, yeah. Tracker.
From our good friends at StatSport. So they measure 14 different...
Have they given us this, by the way, or have they borrowed this to us?
We're still trying to figure that out. Okay. It's sitting in the office and...
They're not getting it back.
Are they looking for
it? They're not getting it back. This is property of Portlaoise GAA Club now.
Well, it measures 14 different metrics, but I think the ones that we look at and what most people look at, speed, distance, accelerations.
Well, I think I know who's going to win the speed part already.
So do I, will he?
I'm 40, lads. Now, I'm still nippy enough, but like, I mean, I'd be very interested. I'm interested in it straight away of wearing one, seeing the intensity runs, basically seeing on a spreadsheet what the inter-county players are seeing now. And I think that's good for the podcast. We'll explain exactly what inter-county players, the feedback they're getting off this.
So like, how hard it is for them in real life.
Yeah. But I was actually thinking about this. Like, I mean, what do you want to do? Do you want to go out and try to bullshit the GPS by consistently running and getting a huge distance covered? But that's obviously going to affect your high intensity runs. So like, I mean, you just go out and play your own game, or else you're only fooling yourself. Like, you're not going to try and get like, and plus Conan plays wing forward. There's a good chance at my age I'll be in the full forward line. So like, I mean, I'd be hoping that my distance covered won't be that high, but my high intensity runs will be very
runs, sharp runs
will be. So all that stuff, like, it's really interesting analysis. And delighted that we can have it, and maybe in the future we can ask an inter-county player to use our GPS tracker for a match. How great
and
would that be?
And see the difference then between what we were doing and what they were doing.
No, no,
13 kilometers compared to 5.
Do you think we'd be able to ask a player to wear it for our use, for our stats on the show?
They would, wouldn't they?
Well, it's hard to know.
Well, these are very expensive pieces of kit.
Yeah.
So obviously, we'd share the information with the management team, but we get access to it. Mm. Jesus, yes, lads. Yeah, I like that.
Does a manager want to give you access to anything
like
that?
Well, then they don't get the GPS. See, that's it.
Yeah, but so they all have their own.
Would they all be wearing them? They're only image
I can remember. Some counties might only have one to share around. That's the thing.
I wouldn't think so. I think most of them nowadays would be fully kitted out. A lot of club teams are fully kitted out with them, so I'd say most county teams
for a GPS per player.
Yeah, per player.
Jesus, that's not what Leash have that.
Burn do, and every game their players are wearing them, every single game.
Right, okay, that's interesting. I think I heard one of the Leash lads saying that they have one or two and they share them around different games. I mean, but
they are expensive. There's no denying that they're not expensive, but in the modern game I would expect that every county team, hurling and football both, would have them.
Yeah, because I think maybe obviously companies like
StatSports
might just give them out for that, you know what I mean, to use them and maybe to get the mentions and get their names out there.
There was a great picture for them. Remember after the Armagh game, Tyrone hammered Armagh and Sean Cavanagh was just walking off and that's all he was wearing was this like vest and it just said StatSports across.
Oh, did it say that?
Great bit of advertising.
Alright, well, I'll take my jersey off after the intermediate match too.
keep it on, please. Just wear the vest out over your jersey.
Are you wearing it with Shiru on Monday then, just wearing the vest?
Alright, okay, yeah, I might just during the summer just wear it around like a little kind of upper body sports
try to get the stats up.
All right, so
heading down to oxygen.
The GPA statement, GPA have released a statement anyway, so they're not happy about not getting the seat on the CCCC, which they wanted to do at Congress. They were just blown out of the water with 90% voted against it. The outcome of the vote of the GPA motion of Congress on Saturday was very disappointing. We feel this is an opportunity missed by the GAA. The GPA wants to play its part in helping to reform and improve fixtures, an issue that impacts very directly on our members and something we all care passionately about. A seat at the CCCC would have helped us to shape that change. All makes sense to me. That's not the whole statement. I've just given maybe the first part of it. Like, I mean, the reality of this is GPA are routinely laughed out of it at Congress. They release a statement, say they're not happy, and then they just take their medicine and they just move on. And that's it. There was no mention of the Dublin in playing two Super 8 games, which for me impacts their members way, way more. And that's just been completely brushed under the carpet. The reality is the GPA are not taken seriously anymore as a players' union. That's the Croke Park are no longer afraid of them. Croke Park used to be terrified of them, to the point where they're giving them the type of money that they're giving them so that they don't have to be afraid of them. And that's the reality. And now the problem is that players don't have a union. They have a players' welfare department within the GEA, which is the GPA, and the work the GPA does for inter-county players shouldn't really be underestimated because they do a lot of good work. But that's the reality. Like, stop calling them a union. They're not. Just not a union anymore. They're not. So now the inter-county players are stuck in limbo with no union. Only they have a union. The CPA. The CPA is a union. CPA does not have anywhere near the clout the GPA have, unfortunately, because it represents club players who generate no income for the GEA, and that's what scares the GEA. We all know that. So I spoke with one CPA representative a while ago, and I told him that they're completely missing a trick here. Completely. That the CPA have a huge opportunity to become the players' union for club and intercounty. All they need to do is go around to every single intercounty squad, give them a presentation, explain to them how these club fixtures are impacting on them, because everybody forgets intercounty players are club players too. This club mess is their mess. Yeah. They're all the same. So if they go around every intercounty squad, sign all those intercounty players up, then they represent everyone. The GPA becomes a complete waste of time. They can continue as a union, a waste of time as a union, I just want to stress, that they can continue on as they're going. Now you'll find and see their funding won't, from the GEA won't be as big if they're not, you know what I mean, if they don't have the same clout. But at the same time, then the CPA is the Gaelic Players Union of Ireland. Everyone. And wouldn't that be great? And then they can start standing up to the GEA on issues regarding players because they're not dependent on their money.
Do you think intercounty managers are going to allow the CPA to come in and do presentations to the teams?
Well, I don't know why, because like, I mean, this it
intercounty
suits them.
Managers can be very selfish, and we know that they are selfish, and they want the players for their time, and clubs a lot of the time doesn't come into the equation, so they don't really give two hoots about the clubs as long as they are getting access to their players on their time.
Here's a point. The April for Club is not suiting GEA managers at all. So if the CPA have a solution for that, and all they want to do is give a presentation to their players after training to sign them up, and all you have to do is sign them up, all this needs is the threat of having these lads on board. Like, that shows the difference. So I don't see why managers, because I think inter-county managers, they're all Gaels at the end of the day. Everybody wants this club situation fixed. And what keeps getting forgotten is that the inter-county players are club players.
Is this thing bigger than the CCCC? Because like they set the fixtures, obviously, and then they appoint referees and they review match footage. That's their whole mission or whatever. But they're told that the All-Ireland final has to be at this time, and then they're told that in that time from January until the end of August, you have to bring in a National League and you have to fill in the Provincial Championships and then finish off the All-Ireland Championship with a Super 8. So are they just trying to sort of manage all that, given what they're given? But they can't change the structure. Does the whole structure have to be changed before they can do a more effective job? Like, I was just wondering, what would a GPA person on the CCCC?
I think they would obviously insist that the Sigerson final isn't on the same day as an All-Ireland.
Yeah, well, there's something like that has would be to be good, yeah.
Like, there's obviously little things like that that they can help on. I don't know what huge revolution they can do, but having a seat on it, for me, would be a step in the right direction. I think they quoted Australian rules where that happens. A representative is on it, and it directly affects players. I'd say they might clean up little stuff that we go, Jesus, would they not have done that? That they might be able to stand up. They're not going to revolutionise the whole fixtures. That has to be fixed with a new programme.
But
you know,
can make it better. At least
they could probably make little things better from a player welfare point of view. Because as we know, the GPA is not a players' union anymore. It's a player welfare department, which still has a role, and I've no problem with that. I just wish they'd rebrand. And I think if the GPA, you know, rebranded, their PR would be so much better. Stop calling yourself something you're not, because that's what we're criticising you about. Do you know what I mean? If just say player welfare department, take care of the intercounty players, which they do. What can you complain about them then? is that we're expecting them to stick up for players when they're not capable of doing it, and that's where they're getting all the bad PR from.
And to be honest, when I saw like GPA statement after Congress, I was here we go. I thought there was going to be a Croke Park thing in here. Do you know what I thought? Oh, fair play to Paul Flynn, he's really taking them on here. But it was just about fixtures, not about players.
Yeah, it wasn't. So Tommy Walsh is back, lads, and he was interviewed after the game. We didn't mention Tommy Walsh, and he deserved a nomination for Player of the Weekend because he was very good in the game. He really put himself about and looked like he was really up to it. And he was saying, I was never going to, he was asked about whether it was on his mind about going back, and we had him on the show last year when he was playing well for Cairns O'Ratleys, and he was like, ah, look, I'm happy enough playing with the club and I'm not thinking about that. And he's obviously covering himself in case Peter Keane didn't actually ring him, but he did ring him. He says, I was never going out with my club trying to get back in the Kerry squad. I was happy with where I was playing good football with Strand Road. And that was enough for me. But then Peter got on to me, and I was surprised to get the call. But maybe the next time they'll ring me is to collect footballs. I don't have too many years left, obviously, so this chance is great. Like, I mean, I don't think he looked too far out of the game against Galway, Stevie. I think he still has plenty to give. He's a great pair of hands.
Absolutely.
And it's unfortunate with the advance mark isn't in for the championship, so we don't get to see him doing that all that often. His shooting boots aren't really on at the moment, but I think he's maybe trying a bit too hard. Because he is an accurate player. Yeah. You've played international with him.
Yeah, and what age is he? He's 31.
Yeah,
so he's still a very young player, you know. So, and he's got a hell of a lot to offer that Kerry team in terms of his physical size, his power, you know. And yes, if he can get his accuracy working,
but he's an accurate player.
He is a good player. But early in the season, and he's just a wee bit rusty, and that's all it is. And
well, that's it. Because the reason I'm asking you is because we were talking about this on the podcast on Monday, and he's like, he's not much of a scorer, but I always remember him. He's got great control over the ball, doesn't he?
And absolutely. And the season that I actually maybe played two seasons with him at international rules, and he was scoring heavily in them a couple of games as well, so he is a prolific player. You know, go back to the All-Ireland series of 2008, himself and Donaghy caused mayhem in the full forward line for Kerry. So you know, you're not going to cause mayhem if you haven't got the ability to create opportunities in front of goal, and he certainly has that. And with some of the talent, the David Cliffords of this world playing off of a player of his ability and size and physique, you know, it only bodes well for Kerry. And it was great to see him back playing.
Yeah, it was great to see him back playing. He started talking about those young fellas you're talking about, Sean O'Shea. He says, absolutely, guys like Sean O'Shea, Tom O'Sullivan, Brian Begley. That's Brino Bjuglach, right?
So just in case,
Brian Begley is just weird when you say that. These are the kind of fellas that are driving it. And some of the time they are dragging the older fellas along. I just thought that was an incredible thing to have a look at Sean O'Shea, Thomas Sullivan, Brian O'Bjuglach, and they're driving them on.
Young players coming into a setup, young players that are used to winning coming into a setup, you know, really drive a team forward and provide a team with a lot of energy, which Sean O'Shea in particular, I think I've been very, very impressed with him so far in the league campaign. Tom O'Sullivan, attacking from wing half back, is an exceptional player as well.
Yeah.
You know, they have players who are driven and hungry and have tasted a lot of success at underage level, and now they want to taste that type of success at senior level as well. I'll give you an example of it. Last year with Bourne, we've had a couple of players that come up from minor grade up in the senior grade, and they dominated underage football in Down for years. They won absolutely every trophy that they could ever win, never lost a championship game. And it was the younger players that actually drove the Bourne team on to win a county championship last year, because those players had a winning mentality. Like the young Kerry players, that have got a winning mentality, and it was those players that were talking about, what's the fear of going to win a championship? We've never lost championship games. So Kerry, those young players are used to winning championship games, and they're bringing that excitement into Kerry football as well, and it will be interesting to see how they cope with that come championship.
Yeah, it is an injection of confidence, I suppose, but a lot of those Kerry players won an All-Ireland in 14, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They know how to win All-Irelands too, so when they say they're driving it, I'm just wondering kind of what he means by that, because I do take your point in with the Leash Miners in 96, 97, 98. We came up to senior, and I thought we kind of brought a confidence and a cockiness to that squad.
Well, the early noughties, Leash were very competitive.
But I don't think we were driving it. It still was the older lads driving it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But we might have brought that little bit extra to the thing that wasn't there before.
I thought Tommy himself would be driving it, because he's only played four seasons with Kerry. You know, so you think he would have that freshness, and now he's back in after another 2 years out. And it seems like his career, like, almost a little bit of disappointment for GA fans, because remember 2008, he was Unbelievable, like he won Young Player of the Year, and obviously he was amazing.
But then he was snapped up straight away by the Aussie rules.
Yeah, I remember he won the league the next year. He destroyed Derry in the final, actually. I remember
he played 09, yeah. Scored four in the final in 09. Yeah.
They have a bad game against Dublin, maybe in the quarters, so he got brought off early in that game. But then obviously he went away, came back 2015, didn't start in the final against Dublin, so it was all sort of a stop-start for him. And now he's back, as you say. You sort of want him to be that enthusiastic guy, even though he's 31, but like he's still got plenty of miles left, I'd say.
Yeah, it's hard to know. It's hard to know what driving it on means. Is it just talkers in the dressing room? Is it the drivers, talkers in training?
It's just the energy that they bring to the training sessions and the youthfulness and the speed at which they want to play. And they play with absolutely total freedom, no fear. So and they don't care who their opponents are. They're just quite an express themselves.
Yeah.
And that filters through the older guys as well.
I think that gives them, that rejuvenates them maybe. So there's some stats on Dublin and Croke Park here, right? So Stevie, we know your thoughts on Dublin and Croke Park. You'd no problem playing Dublin and Croke Park, probably because you always beat them in Croke Park and they weren't playing league games there, and it wasn't the same picture. And I do understand your point, and Colm O'Rourke's similar, and I think it's fellas of a generation before they started playing all so many, such a high percentage of games, and they're so good now. I think that the stats fairly back up now what people are concerned about. So of the 95 games under, Frank Roach had this in the Independent, of the 95 games under Jim Gavin, 70 of them have been played in Croke Park. 73.7% of games. Like, there was a crazy stat that Bernard Brogan hadn't played outside Croke Park until they went to Nolan Park. That was 3 years ago. Like, I mean, just unbelievable.
Championship,
so they've played 35 out of 56 league games in Croke Park, which is in about right, halfway, because some years you have four home games, some years you have three, but they would have been playing league finals there, and they've played 35 of 39 championship games there. Now, this is just beyond belief, right? Dublin have won 60, drawn 5, and lost 5 of the 70 games that they've played at Croke Park. 160, drawn 5, lost 5 at 85.7% winning ratio. Like, I mean, that's absolutely incredible. So that's the 70 being played in Croke Park, right? Of the other remaining 25 games that have been played outside Croke Park, they've won 16, drawn 4 and lost 5. Now, they've the exact same amount of losses from 25 away games as they have from 70 home games in Croke Park. Now, that can't be sniffed at either. And if you actually break that down, they've won 16 and they've failed to lose 9. Or they've won 16 and failed to win 9 of 25 games. That is a big, big thing. Now, obviously, league is difficult to gauge, but it's the Croke Park games are difficult to gauge. You don't know where Dublin are at, and the away games are difficult because you don't know where Dublin are at. So the whole thing in its entirety can be read into. You know what I mean? Because you're looking at, you could use examples of Dublin being unfit going to Monaghan and losing, but then you can also use the same thing. You know what I mean?
I think the earlier, you know, in the league campaign, teams are more pumped and psyched and prepared to play Dublin, and they're coming back off team holidays, whatever, and that's probably when a lot of those results have gone against them. But it's the more that they are together.
Yeah, it is striking though, because I know they drew with Donegal away in the last round under Jim McGuinness 1 year when it was a really important game. So that's one when they were at full throttle. And I know they drew with Tyrone in a mid-season league game. I think that was actually in Croke Park. But the point I'm making here, 87, like these stats are not lying. So 85.7%, 160, drawn 5, lost 5 of 60 games in Croker. Of 25 outside Croker, they've won 16 and failed to win 9. That's a stark contrast in fortunes in Croke Park and not in Croke Park.
It is, and it's the only sort of thing that you can go on, because you can literally count on one hand how many times they played outside Croke Park in the championship. Four times. What was it, Nolan Park twice, Portlaoise once, and Oma.
Yeah.
You know, it's only one real challenge in those, and they won it, in fairness to them, but one game where they might have lost, they wouldn't have lost the other games no matter how many times they played it. So we only got one sample for the championship games away from home. Whereas in the league, you've got a bigger sample size, so that's the only thing you can really go off. And I know you're right, it is the league, and they can get caught, and you know, there are different stages of training and whatever else. So.
Yeah, and other teams are too, though, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you don't know. Like, I mean, I think everything being equal, and we know Dublin might go on a holiday in January, but at the same time, every team might bloody do fierce, difficult, you know, stamina training in January. You don't, you know what I mean? You don't know where teams are at. So, like, if you don't know where every team is at, we can see these. Yeah. You know what I mean? You can read into these stats, and there's a huge advantage there.
I think the thing is here, it's just important to point out like what home advantage means. Like it is an advantage. It's called home advantage
in every sport.
Yeah.
In every sport.
Like none of us will ever. I know you don't like qualifying it. We're not disputing that Dublin would ever win any of these All Irelands, but it does show that home advantage matters, and that's why the GAA and the GPA and everybody else should care about it and try to make it more fair.
Yeah. So Sean Shanley, the Dublin chairman, was talking during the week, and he said, interestingly enough, he said we would have our own stadium. We would have had a stadium of our own years ago if Croke Park wasn't in our county. Croke Park wouldn't give us grants to build a stadium and take away from Croke Park. That's where we're at. Now that's interesting in itself. That Croke Park will give other counties grants. Now I think Dublin have enough money of their own anyway. Mm-hmm. They paid 9 million for the spa well. That's sitting there in Temple Oak. They spent 9 million in 2017. But like, I mean, if Croke Park won't give them grants, because if they build a 30,000 seater stadium, they're taking
it.
It just goes to show how much they need Dublin International Stadium and how this situation will never really be fixed, because they're the cash cow. Yeah. They're dependent on them. They're giving them the national stadium as their home ground and don't want them to move out. Like there's two of them in it. Like, I mean, Dublin clearly happy with this situation. We don't have to spend on a stadium.
Yeah.
We're getting the advantage of playing all our games in Croke Park. Croke Park don't want them to leave and don't want them to build their own ground in case it takes away. For example, Croke Park could be worried that a National League final, for example, if Kerry and Mayo got into it, like, would that be better served in this smaller stadium than it would in Croke Park? And would they have to play a Dublin County Board to stage the game there? So I can see why Croke Park wouldn't give them grants.
And the cost of building a whole stadium. They need Dublin to play in Croke Park. They pay for the mess that is Cork Stadium. Didn't they keep doing that?
I don't know. It's a terrible mess. It's a terrible, terrible mess. And the losers in this whole situation are the players, who are sacrificing so much of their lives to give us enjoyment during the summer, and the integrity of the competition they play in is seriously compromised based on money. And for me, that's completely, completely wrong. Bit of news today, there's Nigel Dunn has dropped off the Offaly panel, lads. And Nigel Dunn was had issues with Stephen Wallace as well. He would have been one of the reasons that kind of broke up, or I think there was some issues between himself and Stephen Wallace. So now it's understood that tension has been simmering in the background between Dunn and John Mahon, and it's believed to have boiled over on Tuesday night with the Shamrocks attacker leaving the squad. So I don't know, when I look at these kind of things, lads, and I can't ever talk about this because I dropped off loads of panels, and you know, just he's not on the team, he was away with his club, only came back. I don't know, when I look at this, I look at, geez, Nigel Dunn, would you just stay in another couple of games? And then I think to myself, you did the very same thing, what are you talking about? And I wasn't, at that time, I didn't care about the advice people were giving me. I was like, I'm being wronged, he's not picking me, and I don't know why, and I have no interest in staying here. Mm-hmm. And looking back, I have no doubt half of Leash don't like me, and I've no problem with that. But it's clearly, like, it's obvious that all this thing dropping off squads, it doesn't reflect very well on you as a person, that you don't have that kind of work ethic to put your head down, shoulder the wheel, take your medicine and work your way back into the team. I never did that. I just got the hell out of there. And I can clearly see it's wrong, because I'm a little bit annoyed with Nigel Dunn here.
You're getting older now.
Yeah.
But it's wrong, but everybody's different, like, you know. And what I was going to ask you is, was there ever a stage, do you think, that you could have been talked around by a manager or a coach?
No.
So you wouldn't have listened to
So the current trend is, you know, a lot of the players are the problem, you know, and doesn't matter who the manager is. And yes, Wally, going back your career, you know, you were a problem for certain managers, and you didn't want to commit when things weren't going your way, and you didn't want to put the hard yards in, the effort to get break yourself into the team. And I would say the same is with Nigel Dunn here. He's just a player that, you know, when the chips are down, he's not prepared to work hard for Offaly as a team. And, you know, he's thrown the dummy out of the pram once again. And to be honest, players you got there, county teams or any team, are better off without him.
Yeah. But even in Justin McNulty, now this is when I was 31, 32, and I should have known better. I was mature enough. But, like, I mean, when you have that fierce desire just to play and you think you can give something. So I went back anyways, and my weights and all my stats were really good. My fitness had moved on brilliantly. I was doing really well on the stats, on the weights and the one rep maxes and all these different tests. And I was doing all right in games, you know. I got one O'Byrne Cup game, wasn't great, but I hadn't played since the previous October. So I was thinking, am I in? I think I like could be in the plans or whatever. Mm-hmm. So then the first league game started, I was on the bench, didn't get brought on. Heard nothing from McNulty. Second league game, was on the bench, didn't get a look in. Heard nothing from McNulty. And I rang McNulty then and I said, Justin, am I in your plans here? Because I'm like, I mean, put in a huge commitment. I've heard nothing from you. You've given me no feedback. I need to know where I stand. I said, we've Antrim at home next. If I don't see game time in that game, well, then I just don't see how. Because like there would be me on the bench, six starters, and then another two subs coming on. So I said, like, for me, looking at the evidence of this so far, I'm down 8, 9, 10 choice forward here. And he says, well, I can't be giving promises to anybody about when it'll be brought on or whatever. So then we played Armagh in the third game. And I didn't
Antrim or Armagh?
Or Antrim, sorry. I didn't start. Two forwards brought on ahead of me. Out the dressing room door, never again. Voicemail from Justin looking to meet up with me. Didn't even reply back to him. Says, like, up his. Yeah. He got his warning. Got his warning. Like, you know what I mean? Just throw a dog a bone. If I got 10 minutes that day, sure, I would have stayed. I just wanted something to, like, I mean, and I thought it was worth it.
I think that's bad management. Like, you know, and not only did you give him a warning, but
I don't think I deserve to give him a warning. I gave him a heads up, but that's where I was thinking.
Yeah, but like, sorry, that's
a warning
like,
is almost like an ultimatum. And I didn't frame it. I didn't frame it like an ultimatum.
I mean, like a warning sign almost for him that he should have reacted to. But even he should have been acting before that. Like, not because of your personality and managing that, but because you're somebody who was in the Leash panel for so long before and you played for Ireland and captain teams. So he should know that if you're given this commitment and playing for the O'Byrne Cup and then not featuring, then he should be chatting to you at least. And like, you should know that, you should be aware that this boy might want a few sort of pointers or like know what's happened.
Yeah.
So like, I think a good manager would manage that situation better and try to keep.
So we don't know. What I think is, every manager is different, and they manage their own players in the way that they see fit. And you know, not every manager has the personality to put his arm around a player as well and to discuss things. But I believe every manager should certainly be advising his players where and pointers where they can improve their game and how they can get into the starting 15. Because if you've got a player who's maybe number 20 but competitively trying to get in that starting 15, then you've got a better squad. And you know, if you're getting that advice and recommendation from the manager, then you're going to be eager to continue to impress during training sessions.
Feedback is vital for managers. That's big. You need to know where you stand. And I do take it, like, I mean, any manager I've had will say about me in that when things are going well for me, I'm brilliant to have around the squad, but when things are not going well, I'm toxic.
Yeah.
So why leave a toxic fella around? Tell him why he's not on the panel. Don't piss. I don't want to sound like a threat or anything.
Don't
have me going around pissed off, because I'll cause problems for you. Like, that's nothing to brag about, but that's the reality. That's what I used to do. Anyways, I'm not going to continue on talking, running myself into the ground here. Another two ones left, lads, is Dara McVitie. Now, I thought this was interesting. It was just a throwaway comment, and I'm going to see what you think of this. This is talking about the Roscommon game, right? He says, you could see in the performance, the boys were fighting very hard. We were fortunate when we went down to 14 men. I was saying to one of the Roscommon lads, the way the both of us play, when you go a man down, it's very, very hard. I was just shocked at this. Like, if I was beside Darren McVitie in the field, I'd say, shut your mouth there, talking to that fella. Like, I mean, is this wrong to be having a chat about stuff like that to a man in a serious league game?
Listen, in a competitive game like that, there are absolutely. Absolutely, no doubt about it. You know, you've got to have your clear focus on your own team's intentions to go and win the match or do as best possible for your team to win. You know, I went back obviously to play seconds football last year in goals, and I'm more relaxed, and I don't mind having a wee, you know, one liner with a player in the opposition team from time to time. But that's seconds football, that's junior football, that's the level that is at. But at inter-county level, no.
You
a
don't.
Player,
you never
should not
to
be
him.
Having a conversation like that there during the game. Yes, you don't mind them saying something, but you know, if it's a topic about an incident or something that happens and there's a stop and play, but that seems to be like a conversation that's gone on during the game.
I was taken aback when I saw it.
How do you know, having a conversation with me and you, Conan, we're marking each other and we're having a conversation. Then
are you going this year, Stephen?
Then the two of us go for a 50-50 ball. Who's going to buzz to then, you know?
Well, like, I mean, you hear all these conversations in league games and clubs. Well, what are you doing? Are you training hard? And you see this going on, and that's I don't like it. But at the same, I'll turn a kind of a blind eye to it or whatever, a blind ear or whatever you can even say that.
a deaf ear.
So what was it? Oh, the example. So we played Kilmacud Crokes. I always remember when I was in the zone, I hated the Louders Market. I didn't want to talk to him. I didn't even want to entertain him. None of the players on the opposition's team did want. And any good game I even remember playing, that's the way my mind was working. If I think back to games where I shared a joke with someone, if the ball was broken in play, I wasn't playing well at that time. So I think we were playing Kilmacud Crokes. We beat them in the Leinster Club semi-final in 2004. And I ended up working with Brian McGrath, who played centre-back for Wicklow, and he was on the Kilmacud Crokes team. And we worked together and we were having a chat. He says, "Geez, I remember when I was marked you in that, I was marking you for a point in that game, and we both fell to the ground, and when I stood up, I put down my hand to pick you back up, and you just slapped my hand away and told me to fuck off." The man tried to help me up off the ground, and like, I didn't want to even entertain his help.
But you're
like,
in the zone now. That's an important game. You're in the zone, that's it. You know, for me, you have to have a level of respect towards your opponent, but there's a thin line between, you know, that level of respect and being focused on your own game, and that's it. You know, you've got to have that focus.
Yeah.
And then they're telling someone to fuck off and they're trying to pick you up.
Listen, even when you're in the zone and having the focus, you always tell people to fuck off.
Would you have accepted a pick up off the ground?
I probably would, yeah. Yeah, I think that's different.
All right, that's just being a real bollocks.
Yeah, you were a real bollocks, and we know that.
All right, we'll come back and we'll talk to Wayne Kieran's.
He goes, "If you boys are doing God's work, you can do whatever you want in the field." And I kind of, for me, that was a free pass.
A smile, that's emotion. So when you say Mickey takes it to another level, what will he be doing this week?
An extra decade of the rosary. I know you're my every
tomorrow, and I know that you'll always be. You know, Tyrone are queer hawks in the final, and a hawk is a queer bird. We've got the world tonight.
Let's hold on together. The Louds sit top of Division 3 on 6 points, and I know we're talking about different divisions, but they've gone from the second lowest scorers in the league last year to the highest scorers in the league this year, and we have their manager Wayne Kieran's on the show now. It's been a great start for you, Wayne.
Yeah, it could. It actually wasn't a great start with the defeat in the Longford game, but overall over the four games, it has been a good start. The boys bounced back really well after the first game and got three good wins with different levels of performance. But we're certainly happy at the moment how things are going.
Was it difficult to bounce back from that Longford game? Because it's not just a defeat, and it was a close game in that first league game, but you're coming off the back of a disastrous year last year. Do you know what I mean? So, which probably made the bounce back all that more impressive.
Yeah, I think we've only have ourselves to blame for the Longford game. Our discipline let us down, and that was the general narrative around the county, is that if we had kept 15 men in the field, like, we probably could have sneaked the win that day, and I probably would definitely agree with that. We weren't ultimately feeling desperate about the performance. Like, you know, we were annoyed the fact that we let ourselves down a wee bit, getting our men sent off, but there was positive instances in that game that give us hope for the subsequent games, and you know, that's what it turned out to be. Like, you know, we bounced back well.
I read an interview you did in the Irish Times, and you said you're not surprised. So a lot of people, especially after seeing that result, would be very surprised to see Loudon now top of Division 3, but you as a group clearly are not.
We never thought we were that bad last year, Colm. I know it was a disastrous year, but it was a difficult situation that we were all facing. Like, I was part of the management team with Pete, and Pete, it was a difficult task for him to come in when he didn't know the players, when there was a turnover of members of the squad leaving, and you know, into the intensity and the quality of Division 2. Like, so, you know, we weren't expecting to have 8 or 10 points in Division 2. Well, looking back, we would have liked to have better performances and obviously have more than 0 points, but so when we come in this year, you know, we were at a low ebb, but we always felt that the scope for improvement was vast, and that we could improve the setup and the team and the performances, and that's what's happening so far anyway.
Right, okay, because that's, so Pete McGrath would come in and he wouldn't really know the players that well, but you're a Loud man and you're a selector, that's probably your job then.
Yeah, well, like, exactly, yeah. So, like, I have to take responsibility for last year as well, equally with everybody else. But, Yeah, look, it was tough, there's no doubt about it. But as I said to everybody when I was given the job, that experience last year, however, you know, difficult it was, would be invaluable in the long run. And it's certainly, even this year, you know, it's in terms of the intensity of the schedule of the league games, and, you know, and all the detail required that you have to cover for all the, and the work that you have to get done, you know, it was very, very valuable to myself and, of course, all the players as well.
Yeah, no, I'm sure experiences like that. Did Pete lose the dressing room? Like, I mean, the reason I'm asking you that is, and obviously want to be respectful to Pete McGrath, who's a legend in the game and has won more than me or you ever did or will.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, like, I mean, he made some comments after the Carlow game in the Championship. I think he was asked whether he regretted taking the job, and he says, "You don't regret it, but I might say I've made better decisions in my life." Do you know, like, to me then, looking from the outside, it's like, Jesus, we were talking about it on the podcast and you're thinking, that's not going to go down well.
Well, look, I suppose no matter what Pete had said at the time, it probably wouldn't have went down well because of the fact that we were being beaten in every game, I suppose, well beaten in every game. But, you know, I'm not sure. It's too black or white to say whether he lost the dressing room or not. I thought he gave a lot of wisdom to the dressing room, an awful lot of enthusiasm and experience to, you know, to all the guys. It just didn't work out for us. So we got off to a difficult start and we couldn't just recover. So I don't think it'd be fair to say, you know, that there was an issue with the manager and the dressing room. You know, it's easy to say that the manager and the players have a great relationship when things are going well, but it's probably too easy to go the other way as well, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, that's true. So what would you have learned much from Pete over the course of your... I'm sure in your own head you're in there as a selector and you've been manager of the minors and you're thinking, Jesus, to work under Pete McGrath now for a few years and, you know, maybe get the top job myself at some stage would have been in your mind.
Yeah, well, I was only too delighted to work with Pete, and as I said, his wisdom of the game and his enthusiasm and knowledge and experience, like, it was great for me to bounce off, and I have to say I got on very well with him. I suppose there would have been differences in terms of, you know, the way we see the game and the way I would see the, you know, how I would train teams compared to maybe the way Pete would train teams. But, you know, I still think there was an awful lot of value in, I got an awful lot of value out of him, and as I said, you know, that experience is standing me in good stead, hopefully, anyway.
Yeah, so what would the differences in how you train teams be?
Well, like, I'd be more, you know, in terms of being more of a games-based approach and, you know, high-intensity training and everything done with the ball, and, you know, we always have whys in our training and why we're doing certain scenarios and why we're doing certain condition games, and, you know, maybe Pete and would have had different views on how he trained teams in the past, and, you know, so, you know, there was some differences there, but, you know, there was no issue really.
Right, so Pete, from just listening to that, Pete McGrath is a bit like Mick O'Dwyer, where you run the shite out of him until the end of March, then the clocks go forward and you play a load of football.
Look, that's one way of looking at it, but, you know,
I'll put it more bluntly than you.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I'd be very, very respectful to Pete now, I have to say that. Yeah. And I, you know, as I said, I learned an awful lot from him, so it was great. It was great to work with him for the years, no doubt about that.
Yeah, and in fairness, I'd say Brian Cody is even still in a little bit of that kind of training system. The clocks go forward and you get the balls out and then it's all hurling. So maybe it definitely works.
Well, there's no right or wrong way. It's whatever your philosophy or whatever method you believe in yourself.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If that's not totally aligned with another person, then that's not the first time that's going to happen in Gaelic football. So, you know, each person has their own ideas and methods, philosophies. You know, I have mine, other people have others. That's not to say anything anybody else's is wrong.
Yeah, you mentioned the whys there, and I thought that was very interesting because, like, a lot of managers will just go out and do a load of drills. Only they might have looked them up on the internet or something, and I've seen different managers doing that, and they think they're great, and there's no real rhyme or reason. Now, that's okay if the drill is just designed to get you fit, but drills should really be trying to improve things that are not going well on the field. And, like, I mean, without explaining exactly why you're doing that drill, you know, like, it's interesting for you to say the whys. I didn't know that had become kind of a term now.
Well, it's something when I started out first, it was always something that I had in my mind. It says, why are we going to spend 20 minutes on a particular activity tonight? You know, what value are we going to get out of it on match day? And, you know, so when you start off with a team, you're saying, well, I need to get the principles of my game into these players. So your activities are based around that. And then what I find is, and what you find is, as you go along and you play games and you say, well, you know, we're not doing well at this, or we're not doing well at that. So your training is then reactive to, well, we need activities to improve X, Y, Z or A, B, C. And, you know, we don't train for the sake of, you know, all the time these guys spend training, we don't train for the sake of spending an hour and a half out in the pitch. We have to give value, the most possible value. And that's why, you know, every single thing we do, we try and say, look, this is going to give us value against Carlow the weekend. This is, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, it's a major part of our pitch before every training session.
Yeah, no, definitely. So what kind of style of player we have? Obviously, we only see the big teams on the television, so I've only been reading match reports about Loud. But, like, I mean, the stats are great. 10 goals. Now, one was an own goal, a crazy, apparently, own goal against Offaly. But you blitzed Laois with goals in quick succession, and you did the same against Sligo. Now, I know I don't think you can do any work to do that, but, like, I mean, are you doing work on scoring goals? You're clearly leaving enough forwards up there that you have the ability to score goals.
Well, we're certainly not a 14-man behind the ball team. And that's one thing I would say. You have to be able to create a balance to allow you to score these scores that you're talking about. There's a lot of work gone into building the attacks, Colm, and what decisions are involved in building the attacks, whether it's longer or quicker, or whether it's short. So we spend an awful lot of time. And so depending on what the opposition team, how they play, you know, we feel that we've good options to be able to break them down and create. Now, to be honest, the goals that we're creating at the moment, they wouldn't care. It wouldn't matter what way the teams are setting up. They're that slick and they're that quality of play, and there's that really good decisions being made by the guys. It's very, very impressive. But you know, we do spend a lot of time on it.
Yeah, I mean, because it's definitely working. There's no doubt about that. None of the minor team from 17 have made the step up, or have I? I've tried to cross-reference some of the teams. I know you were manager of that. Are they ready yet?
Well, there's some of them on the panel. There's four right in total on the panel. So, you know, that's obviously a hugely positive sign. It's a very, very young squad now. So, yeah, one of them has got game time so far, Dan Cork and cornerback, and then there's a sub keeper, and there's Owen Callaghan and Leonard Gray. So they were all in the 17 minor team, and then from the 16 minor team, there's a couple involved as well. So the squad is very young now, I have to say.
Right, okay, because you're managing without Ryan Burns. He got injured. He played well against Laois, and now he's out. Conor Grimes, Kieran Byrne, and their names we would know. So, like, I mean, it is really a new Loud team. Like, I'm looking through it, and I'm thinking, geez, there's none of that kind of household names that Andy McDonald's still there. Like, I mean, maybe I'm showing my age of fellas that might have been around when I was there.
Yeah, sure. Look, I know all those guys you're talking about too. Like, yeah, and Andy McDonald's still there, and he's still producing seriously quality performances, game in, game out. So, yeah, there's a freshness to the team. There's no doubt about that with some of the younger players. But like, you still have your Andy, your Bevan Duffy's, your Jim McEnany's. You know, your Derek Maguire's coming back into the panel now after his exploits with his club.
He was with the club,
junior,
yeah.
All Ireland.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the panel is in a good shape now, I have to say. We'd be delighted with the strength of the panel, and you know, it beckons well for the future.
And any word on Kieran Byrne? How's his ankle? Like, that was horrific what happened to him. Like, he'd be a huge plus for you now. When is he looking to be back?
He's making great progress. Like, he's out on the pitch doing work. So the next stage will be just to find out when he can really step up that training over the next week or so. So maybe, you know, it'd be optimistic maybe for him to squeeze in for the end of the league, but we're hoping that he'd be able to play some part in the championship. So we'll have to wait. See, Conor Grimes would be very similar, so we'll wait and see.
Right, and have you Kieran in around the place? Like, I'm sure, like, his kind of experience on recovery and different training and all the experience he picked up in Australia would be like a good plus.
Absolutely, yeah. He's with the team pretty much constantly, like, especially now as he's back out on the pitch. And he's been in all the conditioning sessions as well. Conor Grimes the same. So, yeah, Kieran's he's a great lad. He's a great attitude. Unfortunately for him, he's been through the rehab process before, so he's aware of what goes on. But he's a great asset to the group. There's no doubt about that.
You mentioned discipline there at the start, and that was against Longford. So, like, I mean, you were two men down against Longford. You were down to 13 men against Offaly as well, and I think against Leash. Like, I mean, I think it's Conor Early who's probably the worst culprit. Yeah. He was red against Longford, sin bin against Leash, then a red against Offaly again, and he missed the Sligo game. But, like, I mean, is this just youthful enthusiasm, or is there an issue you need to work on?
Well, I think it's a tiny bit of both. It would be youthful enthusiasm, and in fairness, since he came in the start of the year, his train has been absolutely excellent. And there's a couple of different things. I think there's over-eagerness, without a doubt. There's the inexperience. There's it can boil down to the technique of the tackle, and it can also boil down to the interpretation of the referees. But I think Conor had a rough time now and just went through a bit of a spell where, you know, nothing was going right for him and there was a little bit of frustration involved. But his training overall and his performances when he has been on the pitch have been very good. So we'll stick by him, and I think he's learning. He has learned probably a lesson already at this stage on what to do and what not to do. So it was a little bit of a concern, but I think it's you know, it'll be sorted out.
Do you play music in the dressing room? Was I reading that?
Yeah, I don't know whether that's such a big thing or not really, Colin. They play music in the dressing room before the game, yeah. So it's just, look, it's a personal choice for them, and it's good that there's nothing worse than going in before a game and hearing a really quiet dressing room and everybody's quiet as mice. So, you know, I have no problem with it. So they bang out the tunes.
They bang out the tunes. So, like, you know these fellas, because this is a big fashion thing from seeing Pogba and these lads on coming into the dressing rooms, and they have their own personalised Dr. Dre earphones. Have you banned them for the communal music?
First of all, as being a Liverpool fan, I can't be talking about Pogba. So we have to leave him out. But if lads are more worried about what sort of earphones they have before a game and, you know, how well their hair styles are, and, you know, I don't think they'd be too welcome in the loud squad. But I don't think if anybody wants to have a quiet time before the game and listen to music, I don't think there's a problem with that either. So it's just, look, it's just the individual's taste.
Because it was in the local paper, in the draw of the local paper that I was reading on the match report. It was after the Offaly game, after an OG by one of their players, and there was music going on in the loud dressing room. I'd say the Offaly lads were walking past there going, these feckers.
Yeah, I know, that was a difficult one for Offaly to take, in fairness. It was a bizarre ending to a crazy game, yeah. Really.
Their own man kicked the ball into the net, did he?
He did, yeah. Right, basically, literally the last kick of the game, the keeper kicked it out and the referee blew the whistle. So, you know, but look, we'd look at it from the overall point of view, is that we definitely deserve something out of the game. So, without doubt, the instance of luck went for us in that game.
Yeah, because you can be a good manager, a great manager, but if you have a bit of luck as a manager, it's better than any other quality, I think, that you might have. Come here, is Carlo's up next then. This is on Saturday night, away. And you know all about Carlo. Yep. Like, I mean, their system is well flagged, and you played them in the Championship last year, so I'm sure all the training is geared around, you know, working outside the screen and maybe how ye transition then when ye break them down and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the good thing, like, we've watched Carlo now for a number of years with Torek and Stevie Poacher, like, so it's pretty clear what way they play. But, you know, it's really only be 10% to be Carlo and 90% of ourselves. You know what I mean? Maintaining our performance levels. There's definitely, I wouldn't deny there's things, you know, identified and things that we've been working on for Carlo, but the majority of it is still trying to maintain and improve what we're doing ourselves. So, you know, that's obviously what we're looking to do again this weekend. And hopefully, you know, the performance levels of the past few games will continue. Like, that's what we're looking for.
Yeah, well, listen, best of luck with it and best of luck for the year. I'll keep my ear out for the music for any of those matches I'm covering, you're playing in.
No bother, Colin. Thanks a million. Bad boys, what you want?
I work as a policeman at Garda Síochána down in Store Street, and I'm coming back out and there's a cohort of loyal Tyrone fans still up in the stand as you come back out, and they're roaring at me, "Hey, Coffrey, you free state bastard." and next thing I hear, "You have no fucking jurisdiction up here."
two big games for me this weekend. There's obviously a really big game in Connacht with Mayo and Galway. We're not going to focus on that one in Paddy Power predictions because I feel that we've talked about Mayo probably an awful lot and Galway too. So I think the two big games of the whole weekend for me are in Division 2, and it's Armagh versus Donegal in Ballybuffet, and that's on Saturday night, and thankfully that's on Air Sport 2, so it's on at 7:15. So I'm watching that, and so are you, Conan. I'm just telling you now. We're both going to we'll watch that, and I'll tell Keelan to watch it, and we'll talk about that on Monday and give Division 2 a little bit. And the other big one of the weekend is Kildare and Meath at 2 o'clock in Park Talton. We know Division 2 is heating up big time, and we know there are two very, very closely you know, contested games, although I think Donegal are favourites against Armagh. I think it's 8-15 or something like that. But like, I mean, this is a must win for Donegal and Armagh, Stevie, because like the reality is that the losers of this are all of a sudden in serious relegation trouble.
Yeah, a must win for both teams. And you know, a few weeks back we were probably looking at the teams in Division 2 and we were saying Donegal and Armagh will be towards the top end of that there. And you know, Donegal in recent years have, you know, having lost two games in a row, that's something that we haven't become accustomed to with Donegal teams, and particularly given the fact now that they are playing at home, you know, certainly puts them in a much stronger position going into this game. Armagh, they've been, you know, up and down. They've drawn games where they should have won. You know, they had a good result last weekend against Tipperary, after Tipperary beating Donegal. So, you know, where exactly are these teams at the minute? We know Donegal are missing the Guido players. They quite possibly have them back this weekend.
See, who are they?
Odin McNeilish.
He's standing out now for 3 or 4 weeks. Like, I mean, he's taking a break. So you're only Neil McGee.
Neil McGee is still, you know,
I do think that this thing, the Guido lads, like, I mean, that the Mulligan and Carroll and these lads, but they're more squad players.
But not only Guido players, you know, I know Michael Murphy stripped out last week. He didn't see game time, but Michael Murphy, you know, I would expect to see game time this weekend against Armagh, and he's the biggest plus going into it, you know, from a Donegal point of view. Both teams are sitting on 4 points. Armagh, I think it's 4 points, isn't it? Yeah. Armagh slightly above them on score difference. But, you know, it's all's not lost for any of these teams. You know, they'll go up with the confidence believing that they will be able to get a result. If Armagh win, it puts them in a very strong position. If Donegal win, it puts them in a very strong position. And the reason why it puts them in a strong position, the teams above them, are Meath, Kildare and Fermanagh, all have had an exceptionally good league campaign today, but they all play each other. You know, Meath play Kildare this weekend, Fermanagh have to play Meath, Kildare have to play or Meath have to play Fermanagh, Kildare have to play. They're basically, what I'm saying is they're all playing each other. So
yes,
they are.
So there's teams
going to be dropping points there somewhere along the line. So, you know, a win is vital for Donegal and for Armagh this weekend. But to lose that game, you know, it definitely puts them in the mix for the drop, and that's what they don't want to be doing.
Yeah, I think Rory Grugan was on the show recently, Conan, and he made a good point. And this is Armagh closing out games. Armagh should be on 6 points here. Like, I mean, the reality of that, they should have beaten Kildare. They should have beaten Clare, 4 points up in injury time. And realistically, they should have beaten Meath to get it back to a point with 10 minutes to go with a gale force wind. And I thought he made a good point because it was a really good interview. And, like, I mean, he's got a future potentially in punditry because he talks tactics really naturally. And he was talking about maybe the kicking game, like, which they strongly believe in.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a little bit too high risk when you're 4 points up in injury time. Like, just hold on to the ball there and work it through the hands and change your game a bit. Because, like, I mean, we talk about the defensive teams being blinkered and married to a system. You don't want to go the other way and be married to a kicking game, which is a bit high risk when you want to close a game out.
And then be too naive then the other way. Like, it's just game management. Like, know when to strike.
That's game management, yeah.
And know when to hold the ball. And yeah, when you're 4 points up, then it should, like, nobody will ever, like, there's not going to be a story done about Armagh holding the ball for the last 3 minutes. You know, they're 4 points up, they've done the work, just hold on to the possession. And now, I know that Clare game, though, they'll probably point to the hand pass goal from Clare, and, you know, a couple of dodgy decisions. It was a referee.
But it doesn't matter about the dodgy decisions. I was at that game, and Clare kept within touching distance of Armagh, and once you do that, I remember it was 4 points in the game with the last few minutes. I said, Clare, get a point here. You know, a high ball into the square will cause Armagh problems, and that's exactly how they ended up getting a draw out of that game. And Armagh, have had opportunities in games where they should be maybe further than 4 or 5 points up, and the game should be dead and buried, but they haven't been clinical. Last week against Tipperary, they showed more of a clinical side to them and probably more of a patient element to their game in the second half, but they need to play with that, their, I suppose, conviction, knowing that in the last 10 minutes, no matter what their opponents throw at them, the game, it won't affect the game.
They had Charlie Vernon playing wing forward the last day, because we talked about balance here. And like, I mean, the talent they have up front is outrageous, because we didn't even mention Jack Rugan, like, I mean, who performed brilliantly for his club and is a lethal finisher. Like, we didn't even mention him into the mix, and he's in the mix, and Andrew Mernon's coming back. And like, I mean, they have Jamar Hall, who's played most of league games wing forward. He wouldn't be the most physical fella, but kind of industrious.
He's a serious worker.
But Vernon is going to be working as well. So it looks like they're going with the four forwards up and then the working, which for me, if I was manager of a team, that would be kind of way I would have them set up.
Yeah, and another player that you probably haven't mentioned there is Aidan Nugent, who's been coming on in the last couple of games as a sub, and probably over the last 5 years consecutively, you know, he's been the top scorer in Armagh leagues with Cully Hanna, so he's an out and out scorer as well. But, you know, I do think it's important for Kieran McGeaney to find that right mix and right blend in terms of his forward line and get the workers in the team in the forward unit as well as the finishers. And, you know, I'm looking at Jamie Clark playing on the inside line as well, and Jamie was held scoreless last week. You know, all the other five forwards starting, you know, contributed to the scoreboard, and maybe Jamie's being double marked when he's playing that close to goal, so maybe he's got the I suppose awareness to create and the creativity to be an exceptional player out around the half forward line as well. So maybe let Jamie have the license to roam as well, and that might create more opportunities for the likes of Stephen Campbell alongside Ryan O'Neill as well.
Well, Stephen Campbell and Ryan O'Neill, like, they're big strong fellas this time of the year. This isn't the time of the year for Jamie Clark, let's be honest. I mean, he's only back after a year out after being in America. Sometimes you can put a little bit too much pressure on yourself. Mm-hmm. I've done that myself. Geez, I'd love to get back in off to a great start. Mm. And like, I wasn't away. Jamie Clark will do his business in the Championship. Do you know what I mean? I wouldn't worry about him at all. It's just this time of the year, Jamie can't get away from his man, and he's being pawed at. And
you know yourself, from a forward's point of view, you know, your primary job in any game is to get scores for your team. And, you know, regardless of how good Jamie is and regardless of all the talent that Jamie has, you know, when he takes to the field, he sees himself as a scorer, and he needs to be chipping that ball over the bar, and he needs to be putting balls in the back of the net, and that does his confidence no harm. The more games that Jamie goes scoreless, you know, going into the Championship campaign in particular, it's not going to do his confidence any good. And I go back two years ago, you know, against Down, when Armagh went in heavily fancied to beat Down in the Championship in the Marshes in Uri, he was held, you know, that day too, and he was limited in what he created, and that come off the back of a disappointing league campaign that year as well. So, you know, Jamie has to be finding scores for his team to build his confidence up as much as possible too.
There is more to his game than scoring though, right?
Absolutely.
He can be the first man out and leave two in and actually set them
up, and that's why I say give him the freedom to go wherever he roam.
I think
because Jamie has a creative side about him.
He's a great creative side.
Yeah,
he does. He's like the Gooch in that manner. Like, he's not just a heavy scorer.
I think that is his best position, almost like the Jason Doherty rule, where you leave the two inside and
the
you
one
go
in front of the other two.
You can rotate if you want, but I remember taking stats when they beat Tipperary down in Thurles in that amazing Championship game, and the amount of ball he picked up around the 45, and it was long direct ball, and they were looking for him every time, and he had the whole 45. Like, he was being marked by Robbie Kelly, who was trying to stick to him, but he couldn't get near him because Jamie Clark was just buzzing. They had too much space out there, and then when he gets it, he's got so much creativity to turn, to play any sort of ball, run at you. Do you know, like, I really like that Charlie Vernon is pushed into a more sort of midfield role, because I never liked him at fullback because I think it was more of a necessity. And I always remember him playing with Queens, and he was like this legend.
Well, you see, having James Morgan back now allows Kieran to push Charlie further out the field as well. You know, and without James Morgan in the fullback line, you're missing that huge presence there. So, you know, he is a plus having him back there.
I often think the Charlie Vernon thing, it was like, I mean, it's like these fads that when Kieran Donaghy went in full forward, we start playing Noel Garvin full forward. And I remember when Cormac McAnallan went from midfield to full back, suddenly the fashion thing was, okay, let's start converting midfielders into full backs. Mm-hmm. And Vernon kind of went into that kind of category. And for me, he's never been a full back. Like, I mean, I don't think he's that.
Charlie's problem is that he's always been a versatile player. You could almost throw him in any position. But one of Charlie's best years was going back to 2010 under Paddy O'Rourke. And Paddy consistently played him a wing half forward that particular year. You know you're going to get a level of work rate out of Charlie, and he's got the power to break gain lines as well, and he does love driving a 30-40 yard pass. So he does. So, you know, maybe playing Charlie in a position like that there where work rate is expected is the best place to put him.
Yeah, so like, I mean, I really like that setup. So you have Rian and you have Stephen Campbell inside, you've Jamie Clark on the top of the D ahead of him, and you've Rory Grugan on the 45 ahead of Jamie Clark.
Another player.
So Rory Grugan is breaking into midfield by the time he picks up ball. He's turning around because he's got a great brain. He's given lovely diagonal crossfield balls to Jamie, who probably picks it up on the 45 by the time he gets out to it, or right or left, who's then turning around and who's got the brains and the creativity to give lovely diagonal balls into the two lads. Wouldn't that be beautiful? Now, the only problem with that, and that's how I would love to have a team set up, what happens when Jamie Clark and Rory Grugan's men just feck off up the field? Like, it ruins... But seriously, this is how a lot of shapes are being ruined. They're being ruined by these attacking cornerbacks that are ruining the shape of games.
Those boys do work quite hard for the team, but, you know, don't get carried away.
It's not about their work rate. I'm taking the point that even if you have that, that's our attacking formation. That's out the window.
Don't want them working back.
Don't get carried away by, you know, names on the Armagh team, whatever. And maybe we have, you know... It got caught in this trap in recent times, you know, getting carried away with, you know, expectations of the Armagh forward line. They are all quality players, they are all good players, like there is in many county teams. But for them to become, you know, what we believe they can become, they've got to pull it together. They've got to, you know, start consistently playing well together, linking up, play together, you know, creating opportunities and being ruthless in front of goals together as a team, not just as individuals, as a team. And until then, you know, I will still be slightly concerned about, you know, the quality of the overall Armagh forward line, but there's great potential in it. There's no denying that.
With what you're saying with the four forwards, like, if there's still 10 outfielders back, that should be enough, right? Like,
no, but see, all the watch Dublin how panicked. The minute you let one go, I do accept that. But once they break through a line, you're kind of scrambling. Do you know what I mean? Once they penetrate that, like, I do accept somebody else can pick them up. But why? I kind of take your point, but why is no team ever letting them on? Why is that not a thing? Because it seems to be they're so panicked about an overlap, because an overlap messes you up, or an overlap might pull a zone, might pull one of your zonal players out of the position and you think you're left wide open. They seem to be terrified of just letting a back on. And we've talked about this on Monday. You could nearly chance it a couple of times and see can you get away with it and put manners on him, because that kind of game of cat and mouse has been going on for years. You never see that game of cat and mouse now yet. It's almost like if you're not working like a dog and tracking him, you're come on off. Like, it's a prerequisite that you'll track your man. And I think if it gets to the point, like you're saying, that it messes up your attacking shape, which is really important to any team, what's the point of it then, really?
The defensive shape, I suppose, needs to be just completely down. You need to know exactly what you're doing. And, like, it's to get those overlaps working, like the cornerbacks going forward, they, like the other team, will need to have men wide who are just wide to try and pull your defence wide. But they're no threat to you out there, really. So the other team needs to realise, like, the danger is in here and we need to plug this gap. We'll have three, four boys tagging men, but then the rest of us need to stay in here. And no matter if the ball is going out wide or my man's going out wide, forget about him, we can all shift over together. But they need to sort of act together. Do you know what I mean? A move as a unity. I know it doesn't happen then because people panic, but they do need to just sort of start being smarter and realise where the danger is. And you'd
love to see Clark or Grugan just saying a chance at this time, ball breaks down, Clark picks it up completely unmarked on the 45, and his attacking fella who's just running up just to try and drag him away, manners put on him. Now let's see you actually mark your man. I have a serious problem with this. Like, these fellas, they're just ruining good forwards for nothing. What are you going to do when you even go up there? Like, get back down the field. I hate it. I really do hate it. I do. I think that if you have three forwards and three backs, three man markers and three taggers and three forwards, and they can't come outside their 45, I think that would put great shape on the game. And that traditionally, that's not really anything crazy. Yeah. It's just your full forward line, full back line that you're not coming out.
Yeah, but that's never going to happen either.
Why wouldn't it happen?
I don't think it's ever going to happen. But listen, a forward that thinks like a forward, that thinks about getting scores consistently for his team, knows that he's got to work hard. When he is dragged out of his position, you know, he should be back in a more attacking position within 10 seconds of being dragged out of it when the play stops or breaks down.
It's harder when you're tracking back and then you're doing all this tackling.
It's not. It's not. If a player thinks like a forward, he would get straight back up that field.
No, but like, but he's only after spending like say 90 seconds tackling and going side to side, and then he has to run 100 yards.
I've done it myself. You know, you get back up the field as soon as possible. You can get your breather once you get back up there, and that's it.
Yeah, but then you're on the attack, so you are compromised in the same type of energy that you would have had if you hadn't gone. That's just basic physiology.
No, it's wrong. You can get yourself into an attacking position, but create space for other players.
Yeah, but that's the problem with Clark, though. Like, he can't create space for other players. He's the one everybody wants to get on the ball. Do you know what I mean? Like, so I could run up and just be like,
I'd be happy enough if Jamie was being double, triple marked and leaving the likes of Ryan O'Neill free. Absolutely. Delighted with that all day long. Stephen Campbell free on a one-on-one situation. I'd take that all day long.
Yeah, okay, right. Well, listen, we've concentrated on Armagh, which we really concentrate. Armagh are probably the one team we talk about outside of Division 1 more than
and it's you.
It's your fault.
I get a lot of abuse for it, but yeah, it's you that brings them up all the time.
Just certain teams interest me. They interest me, and Armagh are one of those teams at the moment, and they just interest me. There's talking points around them, always. You know, it's just throwing. If they stop just throwing away leads, we might stop. We might. If Rory Grugan wasn't so good talking about their tactics, we might not talk about them. Like, I mean, they just keep giving me material. Right. Well, we'll talk our accumulators here, lads. Before we finish up, so I'm going for a 9-1. Like, I'm having a nightmare with these accumulators. So, like, I mean, anyone that follows my accumulators, you need your head red, if you're being honest. So this is a 9-1. I'm trying to tighten it in because my confidence is very low. So I got 2 right and 2 wrong last week. So this week I'm going for Mayo at 8-13 to beat Galway at home. I think Mayo just simply have to bounce back. Galway, we know, aren't at full strength. Mayo are pretty much at full strength now with everybody filtering back in. McHale Park, the record against Galway has been absolutely horrific and continued on in the FBD with James Horan. He'll want to write that because Mayo never lost to Galway under Horan the first time. I think they'll beat Galway at home, and actually if they beat Galway at home and Kerry win, it still puts pressure on Dublin potentially not making the league final, so they'll all want that. I think they're all going to want that. Kildare I'm going for to beat Meath. I think Kildare a fantastic price at 5-4. Kildare really have the Indian sign over Meath in recent years. I've been very down on Meath for since the start of the league, and they've been doing very well, there's no doubt about that. They've been winning games. Whether they've been overly impressive in their performances, that's up for debate, because just listening to Keane isn't exactly raving about them like this is a team that could potentially go up and stay, you know what I mean. I don't think they're at that level. You have to remember Meath lost to Longford in the Championship last year and struggled in Division 2, and they're on 6 points, they're at the top. But a loss against Kildare and another loss, and suddenly you're third from bottom. The way that league is going, so it's actually interesting. They keep missing. Donegal Boyle had some stats on this. Said they were fifth last year. They had to win their last two games against Down and Loud to stay in Division 3. Like, I mean, and that's kind of how I tipped them to go down. I'd forgotten I tipped them to go down. But anyways, then he had a stat. Since Meath came back into Division 2 in 2014. 8 different counties, Donegal, Monaghan, Down, Galway, Kildare, Tyrone, Cavan and Roscommon, twice each have been promoted to top flight, and they haven't. And they've gotten third, 2 or 3 times, and then they've been nearly in relegation bother, and they just never really...
Yeah, well, the result this weekend against Kildare will put them...
I just don't think they'll do it. I tipped against Kildare last week, thinking they were missing a lot of players, and then Tommy Mulick starts in midfield, Paddy Brophy's back in the forwards, and the full forward line of Jimmy Hyland, Ben McCormack and Neil Flynn, and suddenly Kildare looked really strong.
Different side, and they're
really back into the mix. So based on Tipperary's or Kildare's recent form against Meath, and with the big players coming back into contention, I think I'd be going for Kildare in that one. That's 5-4. That's a great price, I think. I'm going for Laois at 4-7 to bounce back against Longford. Laois usually beat Longford, especially at home. And that's 4-7. And I've Wicklow down at 4-5 to beat Wexford, who are having an absolute nightmare. Bottom of Division 4. My God, the morale must be absolutely at an all-time low. I think Wicklow will beat them. Those 4, Mayo, Kildare, Laois, Wicklow, 9-1 accumulator. Don't get on it.
I've gone 7-1 because my confidence is shot as well.
Yeah.
I had one wrong last week.
You got 3 of 4. Yeah, geez, Longford, we're celebrating down, that.
Yeah. Down must have been listening to the show in the changing room before the game.
They got a load of goals, sir.
Yeah, we were all predicting Longford to win, but I've gone with Mayo as well. I've gone with Tip. That Division 2 is like, this weekend is like the perfect set of fixtures. Everybody you could want playing are playing. Like, so I've gone with Tip because they're playing Cork, but both of those teams also need to win because they're both playing each other and they're both in the relegation zone. I think Tip will turn them over. Gone with Leash against Longford, and I've gone with Antrim against Waterford, back on the horse after beating London last week. They've been very unlucky. They lost to Derry by a point, they lost to Leitrim by a point. Both of those teams have won all their games. Do you know, so Antrim just sort of, like, you know, we're saying about the draws of Armagh, Antrim could have gone the other way.
Well, you see, Antrim have been up to Division 3 and back down and up and back down. Antrim really are too good for 4. Like, they will look at that as really disappointing. Like,
they're sitting on 2 points. Yeah. You know, there's teams there. Derry are sitting on 8. I know Derry's head and shoulders above anyway. Yeah. But Leitrim's also sitting on 8 points.
They lost against the top 2 teams. Yeah. Like, they'd be very disappointed, I'm saying, losing. Do you know, they're not... When you say they've been unlucky, they really should be beating Leitrim.
I would say that they are a Division 4 team at the minute. They've got a lot of flair players that you would probably expect more from them, but I think the level that they're at the minute is Division 4, and probably they should look to, you know, play Division 4 instead of going up and back down. It doesn't do them any good as a county. Go up when the time's right for them going up.
Right, well, maybe they think this year's the time's right, Steve.
Well, it's not going to happen now at this stage. It ain't going to happen.
Okay, give us your one there, and I want some feedback on how your last accumulator went.
I can't remember.
Okay.
Right. Oh, it went badly.
It's been a while, but I know none of us have had any, and have we?
Well, I'd question if any of the three of us have ever got one up.
Okay, right, well, I'm going for the handicap bets all week here, so... 4 games, it's around 18-1.
18-1.
Yeah, so Kerry -3 to beat Monaghan.
At home.
Yeah, at home. So I think that's a good bet, particularly after the result, their victory last week against Galway. And Monaghan just aren't going as well as what they had.
Monaghan have lost 3 in a row.
Yeah, 3 in a row. And, you know, I know they travelled, I think, to Kerry last year and got a result.
Won.
Did they?
They won there.
So, but I think doing that 2 years in a row is going to be an extremely difficult task. Next one is Tyrone -4. I think Tyrone are at home to Cavan, is it?
Yeah. But so you should know who they're at home to now. You shouldn't have to think that if you're going -4.
No, but
they're just moving well.
No. Last weekend against Monaghan, you know, there was a different side to them. They started to put more scores on the board as well, and they'll do their confidence no harm. Down -3. At home to Offaly on Saturday night. I think Down they've surprised me by some of the results they've got. Last week against Longford away was a very important result, and it put them in the driving seat for promotion. So I think, you know, the confidence is high there now with a number of their key players, and they'll kick on and beat Offaly comfortably this weekend at home. And the last one is Westmeath -2. Westmeath are playing Sligo.
So away to Sligo.
Yeah, away to Sligo. Sligo sitting bottom of the league, and I think those 4 teams, so it's Kerry, Tyrone, Down and Westmeath.
You're slightly cheating by going with 2 from 3 Division 3 when you're to pick 1 from each 4, but I'm going to let you away with it for today. You can't, you're not allowed to pick 2 results.
I wasn't told or made aware of
this. Oh, you were. You'll have to read your text messages now, because I know you like to send me all messages.
Well, I don't want to be reading out all the messages you sent me.
All right, okay, well, that's it. So there's the accumulators. Take what you want from that. Maybe if you did a mix and match from all our predictions, you might get a winner. All right, we'll be back on Monday as usual with a review show. We'll talk to you then. Good luck.
Yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GAA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.